episode 49. I'm here with Catherine Campbell. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's been a while.
Do you know how long it's been?
Is it 2 years?
All right. It's you were episode 14.
Whoa.
And that was 5 years ago.
So you've probably got a lot better at this since then.
Well, we'll let people be the judge of this, I guess. But yeah, 5 years. I just looked it up today, and it was around this time.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, December 2013, I believe. We sat around drinking Pimm's, which was very civilized.
We did.
But we got ourselves
a
cup of tea.
We've got a cup of tea and Christmas crack.
I won't explain what that is. Maybe the conversation will let us know. Now, the first thing I wanted to tell you was the last one we did. I remember one of the memories you talked about was going on holidays when you were younger and your father being a crazy person and getting up at
2 o'clock
in the morning to drive long distances. And then playing Rolf Harris, Sunrise, at Sunrise. Well, earlier in the year, we drove up to Foster or up to Tuncurry. We didn't leave at 2 o'clock in the morning. We left at 5:30 perhaps. And that is exactly what I did. I did the same thing. When the sun came up, I put it on. Tremendous. Fantastic. I mean, we can say what you will about Rolf Harris.
Yes. Because had all that come up in 2013?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I don't think it had.
Yeah.
But it was, still fantastic. My poor daughter had thought the sun was going to rise as soon as we got in the car and stayed awake because obviously it starts to get light.
Yeah.
Well before the sun comes up, but she didn't know and was fighting, and then went to sleep with about 5 minutes to go. We were poking her and she just wouldn't wake up. And so it was me and my wife and my eldest, and I put it on.
And it was good, wasn't it?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What a great,
I know.
Weird, the sound of it.
I'm so pleased to hear that it's affected another family.
Indeed. I don't know if I'll ever get up at 5:30 and...
Yeah.
And drive again. I don't know how your dad did it at 2. It's horribly unsafe.
Very unsafe. Very, very unsafe. Like when I think, and to think we were laying in the back of the car.
That's right.
In the back of the Valiant station wagon on a piece of foam. Three of us. And my younger sister was laying on the back seat surrounded by the luggage. So she was the smallest one.
Yeah, no, wasn't quite... Yeah, because we got to, we got up there at midday and everyone said, how was the drive? And I said, it was good, but I won't do that again. The first hour was too unsafe. You just feel like, I'm too tired. I wonder if I just close my eyes.
And I just don't remember kangaroos and stuff. There must have been kangaroos on the road because that was the old Pacific Highway. It wasn't the big Smicko one we've got now.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, the drive from here to Goulburn, I always remember just like I'm too tired, and there's going to be kangaroos coming out.
And maybe that's why he did play music all the time to keep him awake.
Leaving at 2 a.m. That's psychopath style.
Well,
truck driver.
Obviously, that's it there then.
Truck driving at crazy
o'clock.
Because
he hates the traffic. My father will do anything to avoid a set of traffic lights. So he'll take 7 give-way signs to avoid a big set of traffic lights in Sydney.
Right. Well, I'm a bit like that. Not in Sydney, but certainly locally.
Oh.
Work out the way where I'm not stopping. I don't care. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what it is either, but he's strange always behavior. Been like that. And, like, he's...
To leave it, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're carrying on that tradition.
Good to hear.
Now, it's very quiet in your house.
Yes.
And since I last spoke to you...
we're really empty nesters.
You're an empty nester, yes. Your two lovely girls...
Yes.
...have both left. And did they leave quickly in the space of...
So Claire left probably... must be nearly 18 months ago. And we sort of inherited Sean around same time.
Yeah.
So, but we would have a timeshare arrangement so that they would spend 2 weeks with us and 2 weeks with Sean's mum.
That's probably a good way to do it.
Well, it became that way because I was sick of cooking for them and I didn't know who was coming home.
Right,
so I said, how about you just make it? Anyway, eventually the beginning of this year, they got sick of that happening.
Okay.
And they've moved in permanently with Jude.
Oh, right.
So since the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
That we have been empty nesters. And then with our dearly departed Ollie 2 weeks ago,
yes.
We're now furless as well. So it's been a big change.
So what's the biggest change of...
Noise or yeah, lack of it.
Lack of noise. Now, yeah. Is that a good thing? Or does it vary?
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. And it's... Not that either girls were particularly noisy sort of creatures, but it's having other people in the house, moving through the house.
Yeah.
That and the fact for me, and I still do it, it's really hard just to cook for two people when you're used to cooking for a family plus.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, so some weeks we would eat the same meal 3 or 4 nights in a row just because I'd made too much. And
I think my mum still struggles with
it. Yeah. Yeah, it's really bizarre, really bizarre.
I haven't lived at home for 20 years, but I have a feeling they cook for 2 nights worse because she just doesn't know how to
halve things
when you're putting it together.
Well, what's the point of doing it just for, you know?
Yeah, for two.
For two. It's
so what about, what's the, aside from just missing them, what's the hard thing of them not being here? Is it, like, is there a negative to it or are you...
No, I don't think it's a negative. I think it's time.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's... And they haven't moved away that far.
Like right, no, that's true.
Kayleen and Gungahlin, you know, not the ends of the earth, really.
No.
So we do see them most weeks.
Yeah.
We'll often all go out for lunch or dinner or something as well, unless they come here. And we've kind of picked up a bit of another daughter, spare one.
Right.
To fill that mothering gap that I have.
Right. So, where do you pick up a spare child these days?
Probably from a school, and it's not to be recommended, I would imagine.
No.
No.
Would you recommend it, though?
Yeah, highly recommend.
Right, yeah.
Highly recommend it. I mean...
Official suggestion would be never.
Never, and it crosses all professional boundaries.
Mm.
She's no longer at school, so that makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But she was a student that I looked after in a nursing capacity, I suppose.
Right,
As a wise auntie style of person.
Yes, you're quite good at being the wise auntie.
The wise auntie. So, so we have Sarah in our family as well now, which is lovely.
So did you wrestle with that decision? Or was it just instantly like, this has to be done?
It was a bit of wrestling because it does, you know, I have professional codes of conduct and all of those sort of things, but I'm a human first and foremost.
Yeah.
And she needed to have some strong, stable people in her life because she doesn't have that. Her family live up in Foster Tuncurry. Now, how there's for a weird link. And she came down here to live with an uncle, and that family relationship didn't work out at all.
Right.
So she was pretty much on her own.
At what age?
Oh, well, they basically told her the day she finished school she had to get out of the house.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And I couldn't imagine our girls having that happen to them. And, you know, I suppose, you know, while she was still at school, there were really strict boundaries. She didn't come here. She, you know, I just caught up with her out and about and all those things.
Yeah.
And once she finished school, it became a different matter because she was no longer at school.
Yeah, that does make it easier.
Yeah.
Right. It is interesting. I spoke to a student just finishing year 12.
Yeah.
And she was asking me about, like, when should you move out of home?
Mm-hmm.
And my advice is always as soon as possible. because so many students will say the same thing. I don't have enough money. And I just said, that's the part of it.
You're never going to have enough money.
That's a part of it. Yeah. Trying to work out. And they always laugh because I always say, like, sometimes you have to eat potatoes for a while.
Yeah.
Rice and cheese was a good one. And they laugh and go, no, that's the reality of it. It's not move out when you can afford it. Who ever does that?
Yeah.
It's because you'll be living with people who can't afford it.
Yeah.
And then what, are you going to be annoyed because you can afford to buy all these groceries? You'll be hoarding groceries in your room and locking the door. That's the share house experience. But she said, my parents have a rule. You are only allowed to be at home if you are bettering yourself.
Okay.
And I said, that's quite a good philosophy, but don't issues come from where, if you think you're bettering yourself, but they don't?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I suppose with our girls, it was, we always used to joke with Claire that she had to be out by the time she was 30. Because we could see her being there.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, you know, and I actually joked with her today that if she hadn't been induced, she would have still been in utero. That's just the kind of person that Claire is.
Right, yes, my sister-in-law was the same. Tied, what did they end up doing? Have you heard of this? They put things around, this is my mother-in-law's stomach, wrapped it tightly so they would forcibly shoot it out.
Is that right? That sounds horrendous.
I
went the orange juice and castor oil route with Laura to get her out.
Did that work?
Oh, it did. Well, it got me to hospital and then everything stopped. And by then I was so far overdue, they just said stay. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. So both your girls were overdue. But that's what they used to say about Lizzie. And it was the same with getting her out of the house. Eventually they'd have to shoot her out the front door.
That's it. She'll go eventually.
And she will go eventually.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, and I suppose while they were at uni, then we were certainly keen to support them in that way, knowing that how difficult it can be. Having said that, they both had jobs and they both have always had jobs from when they could.
Yeah.
And we encourage that sort of independence.
Yeah. I mean, just from on a surface level, it appears you've done a tremendous job of raising two very nice children.
Thank you. We feel like we've done a good job.
And my daughters will attest to the fact that both picked very nice partners as well, especially Laura and Sean. Laura and Sean are like a...
Laura Shauna.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like a celebrity couple who I've seen as, certainly for my children, as one
there's
person.
Other children that feel exactly the same way. There are some families in England currently awaiting their arrival.
Oh, wow.
Actually, Sean's arrival, not so much Laura's arrival.
I do know, and I'd love to ask Laura this, the times that she's come over to babysit without Sean, how that's been. For her ego of the girls looking past her to see where Sean's hiding or asking after 5 minutes when Sean's turning up. So, yeah, so you've done very well, like I said.
Thank
on
you.
A very on a surface level of what I've observed, yes, they're very nice people.
They're good people, and that's a really nice thing as a parent to be able to say that.
any tips on that?
No.
No, right, good.
Blood, sweat and tears.
Blood, sweat and tears, yeah, the hard work.
And sticking with it, even though it feels really hard.
I remember, I don't know if it was on the podcast or the battle that we've had with our eldest child, and I mentioned this on a few podcasts ago that I did, was his... teaching them the importance of gratitude.
Yep.
And my 10-year-old's seemingly on board with that now, realizing, you know, what's important and what she's grateful for. It's still not constant. And it's probably the number one thing that angers me very quickly that she does is if she's not.
It's almost that sense of entitlement, though, isn't it? That's what you don't want. Well,
no.
I think... the two of us, that's what, you know.
And working in a school.
Yeah,
you see
so much.
Yeah, and you see the students who are grateful and are polite.
Yeah.
It's not that they do better at school.
No.
But their school experience is nicer. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's really...
And as a teacher, that must be really hard for these kids that think, well, you're here to teach me.
Yeah.
You're being paid to teach me.
Yeah.
Teach away.
Yeah. I had a year 12 student who's just finished and that was his attitude was, you need to help me, otherwise these marks will reflect badly on your teaching.
Whoa.
So that was great for him to think that way because it was, okay, that's an interesting position to stand.
Yeah.
It's not how I see it, but if you want to feel that way, go right ahead.
Yeah.
Like, oh... But, you know, But that was his whole outlook was, yeah. I've worked harder than I've ever worked before and my marks aren't improving. Uh-huh, right.
There seems to be that lack of resilience in that sort of thing too.
Yeah.
It's always got to be the good stuff all the time. It can never be, bad things do happen to good people.
Right, yeah.
And that's just a fact of life, but a lot of kids think that it needs to be sunshine and lollipops all the time.
All the time, yeah. I think by the time they're at college, they're a bit, most of the students I've encountered are a bit more worldly in that regard.
Yeah.
They've had
nothing
friends
like year 8 or year 9 for that.
No, age. God, no. No, the teenager of just not seeing past themselves is, especially teaching in a high school from 7 to 10, is that that's probably the biggest difference is, by the end of year 10, you'd hope they're seeing past themselves. But when they arrive, year 7 and 8, and that's why they, I need advice on this matter, I'm going to get it from my friends and only my friends.
Yeah.
Because they're my age, therefore they understand what it's like to be this age and no one else does.
No.
Even people 3 years older.
But that's their frontal lobe not working.
No,
that's them having to rely on the bit of their brain that's the emotional side of their brain. So relying on your amygdala makes you feel that way.
Yeah, and that's the...
And by the time they get to college, you've started to be able to use some of that frontal lobe again and see that there's more to the world than their little tunnel.
Yeah, and again, and the biggest difference is I don't like those people over there, and that's the end of it.
Mm.
Whereas in year 7 and 8, it's I don't like those people over there. I'm going to watch everything they do and comment on it.
And be nasty to them and
laugh at them if they get in trouble and just continually stir the pot.
Yeah.
And I don't, anyway.
I bet you don't miss that, do you?
I don't, but my daughter's heading towards that age. So, and I'm already saying things to her, and I was talking to someone yesterday about this, is that over time she's going to see me as some kind of wizard because you're able to say, this is what's going to happen with this situation.
Yeah.
But it never changes. They know, you can tell them all you want, this is exactly what's going to happen, but it's still going to happen that way.
Yeah.
And then they go, what you said was going to happen. Okay, well, why did you keep acting? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I'm hardwired.
That's right, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, you almost wish you could just put them in a coma for those years, don't you? You know.
Well, was it like that even for your girls?
Yeah, I think year 9 is an awful year.
Year 9's the awful year.
Well, it was, Laura.
Right, yeah.
It was her awful year. Year 10, year 11. and they just take it all to heart and you feel for them because they are trying, they are trying to be nice to people, but it's not always, they don't always get that back.
No.
And you also know that they're probably having a bit of a go of it as well. You know, they're not entirely blameless.
No, that's right.
And I suppose that's how they learn stuff, is that they have to experience. You can tell
that's
until
exactly
you blew
right.
the face.
That's right. They have to experience it to get any kind of perspective.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard part. And they're battling with everyone else's frustration at them.
Yeah.
Of why can't you see this and this is what you're doing and... But they have to go through it so they can look back and go, oh, that was...
And the hard... I remember thinking the hard part about high school, the whole of that was, that in primary school they absolutely loved learning and they loved doing all those
things. Violet's already... She's finishing year 4.
Yeah.
She's already...
Starting to get that...
Well, she's already noticed. In kindergarten, everyone wants their work read out and shown.
Yeah.
Now, nobody does.
No, it's year embarrassing 4. To do that. And they, and with the girls, it was like they hit high school and it's just like this different, like, oh, where's that love of learning new things gone? And now it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I have to learn.
I'm being made to do it.
Yeah, and I don't know.
But you're seeing that even earlier. That's really scary.
Well, I think that's what happened. I think by year 6, or certainly by year 6, is that I just, oh, God.
Wow.
I want to win awards, but I don't want them to be presented to me in front of everyone. No,
especially don't want my parents there because, oh, my God.
Well, we still haven't got that. Violet's still happy enough to have us there when she hosts assembly or get awards. But I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, where they're like, oh.
And it sort of breaks a little bit of your heart as a parent.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Because it's like, maybe those are the things that set you up for them leaving home eventually.
Yeah, they've got to break your heart one bit at a time.
That's it. Just snap another little bit off.
What I mean, as someone who's got two children and have just left home, what a lovely future you've just painted for me.
No, it's not all bad that way.
I can.
It's a different relationship now, though. Yeah. We have a different relationship.
Yeah, of course. But I can see Violet. She's already been working on this from like 3 years old.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to break your heart just a little bit.
Each time.
I'm already, you know, but now she's come back, it seems, to the fold.
Yeah.
A bit more. Her awareness of we went away on holidays and, you know, she said, oh, I'm really demanding. I don't know. Some of the aunties were like, oh, yes. Self-awareness. Yeah, 10 years old, she got self-awareness, which is very valuable.
Yeah.
And
the ability to reflect on that. Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of it is, she'll ask the advice and eventually you just have to stop giving advice.
Yeah.
Because your advice is stupid to them.
What would you know?
Yeah. Wow, that's bad advice. Yeah. That's the same advice the teachers gave us.
And that would happen to me all the time is that I would know that the teachers had said exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And then I would say it and it'd be like, oh, it's the first time they've heard it. And I'd go, this can't be, whether I just said it a different way or.
They just, they hear things from different people at different ways. Last year she went through all this trouble with her friendship group and we know because her teacher was fantastic and was talking to us and we're all saying the same thing, but it wasn't until, the start of this year that she would come home and parrot the things back to us. You know, if I just did this and this, and you'd have to be like, okay.
Mm.
And know from experience not to go, we've told you this.
We've told you already.
Good, you got there. Yes. Excellent work. Yeah, it's fun. The high school, but you're not at school anymore.
No.
A lot of changes.
So many changes. So in May this year, I was asked if I would do a 6-month secondment to manage the school youth health nurses.
School youth
health nurses, which is what I've been for the last 9 years, since 2009. And I have, for many years, because they said, would you do holiday relief? Would you do that? I go, no, I'm not ready to give up my clinical work. But I'd had a few really tough things happen at school over the last couple of years. And I think I was just getting to the burnout stage.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be the person that said the wrong thing to a kid who finally came to tell the shit storm of their life to and not me not be able to give them
not be available.
So after I cried for a day or so thinking, oh, I'm going to leave my school. So I've been doing that since May and then it was extended until March next year.
Right.
And so I manage the school youth health nurses and I manage another team called HASS, which is Healthcare Access in Schools. So they're nurses that go and train learning support assistants in schools to do things like for kids, little kids with diabetes or kids with trachees or peg feeds or those sort of things.
Yeah.
And I've never really liked that thought of managing other people. I like to. That's a skill.
Yes.
Because personalities.
Yes. I heard it described the other day of everyone's on the water.
Yep.
Some people want to be on a yacht.
Yeah.
Commanding.
Yep. I'd
rather be on a surfboard.
Yeah.
And some people have a yacht.
Yeah.
Just to say, look at my lovely yacht. But that's how I feel. But it's interesting hearing this. So because I don't want to manage adults.
And I have said that, like I've been nursing, what am I up to, 36 years now?
Yeah.
And I've said that I've done other times where I've acted in a charge nurse. So this is like a charge nurse position. Anyway, but I have done it. And I have actually really enjoyed the challenge.
Yeah.
I surprised myself of enjoying the challenge.
It's a different set of rewards and challenges.
Different. It's really, I find it really worthwhile to be able to support the nurses understanding exactly what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And what do you mean, and it's a broad thing, but...
You know, when you listen to people's stories of their shit-stormy lives,
yeah,
and you try really hard, you're there as that person who validates their experience, is just listening.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard not to take that on board all the time. If you hear it once a week, that's okay. If you hear it six times a day, every day, it starts to, no matter how much self-care you do and how much, it starts to change your perspective on things, on how you act in your own life. You know, you don't want to come home and say to kids, well, your life's nothing like these kids are doing at school.
Yeah.
So to be able to support the nurses in dealing with what they listen to, and so I'm sort of like their debriefing person that they get to say those things to.
Right.
So
you're still doing a very similar job, aren't you?
Exactly, just at a different level.
Yeah.
And I think I've got a fair bit of vicarious trauma from some of the stuff that I've had to deal with.
You mean with the students?
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Is it more of a challenge dealing with the stuff the nurses are bringing to you? Or is it more of a challenge dealing with people who have that more self-awareness? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because one of the things when we choose school youth health nurses, and you can't write a selection criteria for it,
no.
But we look for emotional intelligence. And when you have emotional intelligence and you can be self-reflective about what's happening, it also heightens your awareness of all those sort of things as well. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of their...
And, I mean, that comes back to Sarah as well with, you know, it's really hard. I mean, there were multiple kids that I just didn't want to bring home and just show them what a nice family looks like.
Mm.
You know, how people can live in the same house and not be yelling at each other all the time. And
how they talk to each other.
That's right.
And how the silence.
That's right. How you can have a meal around a table and people are talking about things and it's...
Not tense.
That's right. Just those sort of things. And so we all have kids that we would have liked to have brought home and just loved up.
Yes, I'm nodding.
Yes, you've got the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what advice do you, like the most basic level of how do you not bring that stuff home?
I'm shit at it. I'll say that up front.
Right. Because it, from my experience, it's something you learn to do.
Yes.
As much as possible.
I mean, I know people that say, I walk out the door and I don't think about work again. Well, I wish I was like that, but I still think about it at 2 o'clock in the morning when I worry that what's going to happen to them more, you know?
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't worry so much if the services I knew that were there to help them were actually going to do their job. Because that's my job, is to refer kids to services,
when you don't trust the service.
When you don't trust the service, or there's an 8-week wait before they even get a phone call.
Yeah.
You know.
It's fine, the government's, you know, on top of that.
Oh, they are.
They don't need to take money from those services.
No, and they do. So I think having a safe person that you can debrief to.
Yeah.
And I also don't want to traumatise anyone else in this house.
With
the stories.
Right.
So I would have clinical supervision, so where it's social workers will often do it, they do do it, psychologists do it, where I would bring a case to my clinical supervisor and we would talk about the things that I had done, was there anything I could do differently, all of those sort of things. Sometimes you just have to accept that kids' lives are shit.
Yeah.
And that you've maybe been a bright little spark for 10 minutes in their life.
Yeah.
And you have to sit with that as being
good okay. enough, don't yeah. you? Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, there's all this talk about good enough parenting. That's
what's shit. Good enough parenting? I don't know if I've heard about this. So
places like Care and Protection or Docs.
Right.
They, you know, they aren't, and I understand that not all parents have the same capacity as I do to parent. Mm. Now, I'm lucky I'm a middle class person with an education.
Yeah.
You know. And so that there is a level of good enough parenting where your children are safe, where they're being fed, where they're being housed, where they're being clothed. It may be not what I would do as a parent,
yeah.
but it's good enough parenting.
Right. That is a sliding scale,
it's
right there.
It's a sliding scale of parenting.
Yeah.
And in my mind, and I think for the people that work in that area, if you didn't think that, then it would be impossible to do the job.
Right.
And know that people are trying to do the best with what they've got.
Mm.
But for me, I wanted to do better than good enough.
Good enough, yeah. Yeah, it is. That was what was always sold to me was this might be the safest 6 hours or 7 hours of their day.
That's right. The fact that they come to school.
Yeah.
And they mightn't do any work. They might wreak havoc the whole time they're
and that there. That is the push and pull of any job, student services yeah. or being a year advisor yeah. or being the nurse is having to talk to teachers who are yeah. saying they come in and destroy my class yeah. and let's get them out of here and all this stuff and I can't teach them their... all the horrible things that people do say
yeah.
and you go, yeah, okay, I get what it's like to be the teacher.
Yeah.
But
also have a think about here. What it's like to be that kid.
Yeah.
To be so dysregulated.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've seen through my time in working in education that there is now far more awareness of trauma.
Yeah.
Whereas when I first started, it was all a behaviour, they're a naughty kid.
Yes.
Whereas now it's what else is happening for that kid that leads to that behaviour.
That's right.
That's certainly within the student services model, but as you say, you've got individual classroom teachers. Yeah. And I totally get
yeah,
that.
Yeah, of course, because you've got totally a teacher that's that. Like, oh, there are 30 people in
absolutely.
This classroom. Why is this one child
yes.
doing taking up all this time
yeah.
and all resources?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They are.
They do.
They are and they do.
And because any attention for them is good attention.
Mm, yeah. And it's remarkable what they view as positive attention
yeah.
eventually.
Yeah.
And what they view as... And that's sometimes the saddest things moments I've had in teaching is when you show, like, the slightest... compassion to them or the slightest empathy to them how positive they react to that.
Yeah.
Like it's the only time
that happens. Take much,
it really doesn't take much. And then you see them in the community years later and they still come up to you and respectfully talk to you.
Happened
and,
to me just the other day in Woolies.
Yeah, and they might not look
big,
like...
Big, 6-foot-odd.
Yeah, they might not look like respectful and that might be the only respectful interaction
yeah.
they've had that day.
Yeah.
But there's something about that. And it's a nice... I don't know. It's a nice fantasy world if everything could be like that, if everyone reached out to them and if everyone had the time and... resources to do that in every moment of their day,
yeah.
then everything will be fine.
Or even if people got it when
yeah.
they start. But we have a bit of a, we have, you know, the starfish story. Did I tell you the starfish story?
I don't know about the starfish story.
So I actually found this several years ago and it totally, we have all have copies of it, all the nurses have copies of it because it's so totally what happens.
Yeah.
But the story is that on a beach early one morning, all these starfish have washed up on the beach. And there is this young boy, so all these other people running, jogging, doing all their things. there's this young boy just standing on the beach chucking one back in, but they all keep washing back in and he just keeps sending. And this old guy comes up to him and said, I don't know why you're bothering. You know, like, what are you doing? They're just coming all the way back in again. You're not making any difference. And the young boy picked up the starfish and threw it back in a bit further and said, well, I made a difference to that one.
Yeah.
And it's that thought that sometimes, you know, we get overwhelmed with the big picture stuff, but maybe just for one person, you've made a difference.
Mm. Yeah, and you never really know.
Yeah, who which.
Yeah, and what little things
do.
And I think that's one of the things. I mean, teachers love to have a good old moan about how they're underappreciated, but I don't know any other profession where people come back or see you in the community and say, thank you for taking the time with me for 4 years. I don't know if that, I mean, I don't work in any other professions, but I can't imagine that's happening to many other professions.
Maybe midwives.
Maybe midwives, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So the nursing teaching has always been a very similar story of career. But yeah, it's very, what other job do you get students saying, oh, I was terrible to you for like 2 years.
But remember that day.
Yeah. I remember you said one thing to me and you've forgotten it.
Yeah, absolutely. Out of your head. Been important to you.
No, not important. Yeah, but it was just one little thing and they just go, oh, that's it. That's kept me going or, you know. And I have students say things to me. I don't know what to do with them. I don't know how to handle the huge things that they've said. And you just go, oh, okay, that's very nice, thank you.
Yeah, now what?
All right. Now I've
nurse!
Yeah, and then you've got to go into school and go, oh, my God, is this what's happening with every student? Like, do I need to do this for every student? And obviously, you don't.
No.
It's a very odd experience.
And, you know, here we are in this very known as, you know, a posh place to live, Canberra.
Yeah.
People wouldn't think.
No.
You don't have to dig very far.
No.
You don't have to dig very far at all.
No. All right, well, we're going to wrap this up.
Good eye. With
something a little more lighthearted.
Oh, good.
Can you tell me about a bus trip you took? I don't know when this was, a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where you were carrying some delicate luggage, shall we say?
Yes.
Can you tell me that story? Because I love that story. And I don't think I've got all the details from you.
So, I was just trying to think. That's what it was. We were making a little video for a Christmas skit.
Right.
Right? Of all the things that we do as nurses. Now, you know nurses have pretty crazy senses of humour.
They sure do, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the things that we had recently received was a new delivery of 6.5-inch dildos.
Right.
And so...
This is for the sex ed...
So for the sex ed classes.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he used to they put condoms on...
On bananas. Yeah.
Sorry, they were strap-on?
Strap-on, yeah.
Righto.
Yeah, they didn't come with a strap, so I don't know what you're meant to use to strap on
them with. Or why you needed them to
because
be strap-on.
Because that's all that came when they ordered them.
Right, okay.
And I don't know where they ordered
them. So it might have been like the knock-off ones. We've got strap-ons, but the straps aren't here, so we'll discount.
That's right, we'll give you 20% off.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds very
And I can
accurate.
Just imagine, you know, one of our ASOs going out to Fishwick to purchase such things.
Yeah, the question when I mentioned it to other people was, is there a dildo petty cash system set up in schools?
No.
Right.
There isn't. So anyway, we did get these dildos and they came in a lovely, you know, that hard plastic stuff that's almost impossible to cut.
Cut, yes.
Yes, but these ones you did open so you could put them in there.
Right.
And I had taken that cover out because we had used those as chocolate moulds.
Chocolate moulds, yes.
As you do.
As you should.
As you do for the video. And so I was travelling into work on Wednesday, and on Wednesday I would work in town.
Right.
So I'd catch the bus, and I had it just sort of in my bag with my book and my lunch, and I pulled my book out of my bag, and out of my bag came my 6.5-inch dildo that then happened to roll down the centre of the full bus.
And I have to ask, what colour was it?
It's a clear one.
A clear one, right.
Yes. Yeah. But, of course, you pick it up and then it goes...
So So when did people start noticing this happening?
Pretty soon. And I then got all flustered.
And embarrassed.
Because I don't look like somebody that would carry a 6.5-inch dildo in their bag.
I love it.
So I sort of gathered it up and tried to shove it in my bag again.
Like Excalibur, is that what?
Yeah.
Wow, so you're trying to get this in your bag, you're going bright red.
Bright red.
You know, full Wednesday morning crowded bus.
Yeah, I know. And this is before we'd even got to the mall. So at that stage I was sort of thinking, do I just get off the bus
and catch the next one?
Right. Or what do I do? But I just sat there.
Did you ever get the idea that if you got off the bus, that, like, other people would get off the bus with you and be like, all right, I've got to see where this lady's going.
I know. It was just the weirdest sort of thing. Anyway, the girls did buy me a zip-up bag for Christmas so that it never happened
a special
again.
Dilly bag.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so we did make a video using...
You at any stage... Say, I'm a happy in your hand, waving around. I'm a nurse, it's okay.
And because I have my, you know, ID pass on too.
That's so fantastic.
But it was, I think for me, the action more of stuffing it in my bag was.
With everyone watching.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, you know what? You've made so many workplaces around the ACT.
Because, you know, nothing like publicly outing yourself on Facebook with it because. That's what I do.
Yeah, that was fantastic to get. I had so many questions. It was just like, right, I've got to know the full story. But just can you imagine if you could track the conversations when people got in. Guess what I saw today?
Yeah, guess what I saw today?
This woman's, dildo ran down the thing. She was shoving it in a bag. She was bright red. Like, oh, my God.
She's
why
trying
was
to sit down.
Why does she have it in a bag? Oh, my goodness me. What did she look like? Oh, well.
Yeah, so I was a bit careful the next week. I caught the earlier bus.
Yeah, they're all going to give you a round of applause.
An encore performance.
Oh, all right, that is an all-time story. I like that one. All right, well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for the return. It's been 5 years.
Number 49.
Number 49.
Woohoo!
And I will see everyone again.
Yeah.
On the 50th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.